Hey everybody, my name is Tom Scott, chairman of the Nantucket Project. I'm here as usual with R. Pietti. Just a quick announcement, these are now available as podcasts. You can find them in the Apple Podcasts or the Apple iTunes store. Have a look. Thanks for being back here, RP. We don't have a lot of time today. I just want to have a brief sort of philosophical conversation and then tie it into a little bit into the way of numbers. You and I were speaking earlier about the way you're sharing with your own group about how to think about this as an emotional journey that, you know, you guys are going to have to get through and we're going to have to get through. And I'm just curious your general thoughts on that part of this process.
Thanks, Tom. It just sort of feels to me, everyone's got different calendars based on when you went into your self-quarantine, if you're lucky enough to be able to go into self-quarantine, that we had kind of 1 week of what's going on here, where's my office, what's this Zoom thing, how do I get the kids to work, what doors close and open, you know, like what's it like to do this at home for those of us to whom this was new. So 1 week of, let's call it discovery of our internal reality. Then we had 1 week of like, oh, this is cool. This is like camp. Like, this is a neat thing. I get to see my kids all day and I get, you know, whatever. I'm at home. It's comfortable. You know, maybe I have pajamas on underneath the screenshot. Maybe I don't. And then we got to what I think was last week, or say up to now, which is this kind of sucks, right? Like, this is really hard for moms. It's really, they particularly if they're working and they got to get the kids in front of the computer and they got to manage the kids and they got to clean the house. This is really hard for them. And it's really hard for dads because hopefully they're helping out with that. And it's really hard for the kids who are stuck in the house. And it's really hard for the delivery people. And this is real. And what do these numbers say? It looks like this is a horrible thing. Like, this is like the week of, whoa, I kind of am getting it, right? Because numbers are abstractions. A lot of what we've seen on TV are abstractions. A lot of what we've tried to do, Tom, I think, is tell stories. People are learning. So I think that's maybe, to me at least, what this week feels like. And here's the good news and the bad news. There's probably at least a month more of, you know, this, right? Staying home if you can, or if you're working, being at risk. The stories are going to get more dire. The curve is going to get steeper. More and more famous people or people we care about are going to die. And I think at this point, we should steel ourselves for, as I said, a month more of this and know it's ahead. So that's sort of the bad news. The good news is let's use that as a moment to relieve some of the confusion and the angst and the frustration, because now we have some idea of a vision of when this ends. Big caveat. And we've talked about this too. It can end in a month if everybody socially distances, washes their hands, etc. It could be over in a month. If 10% of America doesn't, it won't be over in a month. So anyway, that's my kind of view of where we are in the process. And that maybe we can recognize this is what's coming and figure out how to make this kind of a fascinating month for everybody as well.
So RP, you talked about if managed right, this could be over in a month. Can you just define over, because I imagine you have a somewhat limited definition on what that means, but I'm just curious how you would characterize that.
There's all sorts of complicated ways out of this. You'll hear about this idea that people who are serologically positive can go back into the workforce. You'll hear about treatments that make you less sick if you get it, and eventually you'll have vaccines. That's not how we're going to get out of this in the short term. When I say over, I mean if 90% of America doesn't spread this disease or more, the disease will literally go away in America. Now, we then have to stop international travel. We have to lock ourselves down. But we can get back to something approximating normalcy if we have 4 weeks of disciplined effort. Now, this is what I've been suggesting the White House do for a long time, a month, more than a month. And they've yet to really do. But in the president's press conference 2 days ago, he's basically handing the mantle of control over to us. It appears he's not going to mandate a self-quarantine, but he's saying to us, here's a series of rules. If you follow them, we'll be through with this. And he's right. Now, he's wrong, I think, that he's not locking us down, because I don't think that Americans are going to, hopefully, I don't know how well Americans will follow the suggestions versus follow laws. But over means over. I mean, four weeks, if we do this properly, the disease will be so eradicated, because everyone will have been identified as sick. It doesn't live in trees, right? There's not bats flying around here or pangolins we're going to get it from. It sits in humans right now as the vectors of all the sick people. The vectors are identified and treated. Some, unfortunately, will die. Then it will go away for the time being. And then we have to worry about international travel and introducing new vectors.
You know, I think I recounted this story, but if I didn't, I'm going to tell you. And so I was invited to a wedding around September 28th, 2001. It was in California. I went to the wedding. I was one of the few East Coasters who went to the wedding. While I was at the wedding, the West Coasters commented, why did so many people not come? And it really struck me as, wow, geography matters. Like they don't feel it the way we feel it. To me, it was obvious why they hadn't come. We're looking at hotspots now. So hotspots seem to be those places that didn't see this as a big problem, even somewhat recently. And it does seem to be the case that that's happening in real time. And you know, some of these conversations become political in nature about this topic. Some of this is just psychological reality, is it not? Do you agree with that?
I have to put in abeyance my deep anger at political leaders who put their states at risk in the last 3 weeks in face of expert data telling them they shouldn't. So we'll skip it. Like, you know, you should know that, right? There are a number of leaders at the state and federal level who did this wrong, and people are dying.
But they are not hearing that, right? I mean, in part.
The leaders aren't hearing that. Well, look, I mean, the populace isn't hearing it either. The polling data shows that everyone's relatively happy with how the leadership elite's handling this. And that is simply in contravance of the actual data. So it is what it is. But yes, you know, we have talked about, we have said very clearly that states that didn't do a proper shutdown and people who traveled to large gatherings are going to get sick. You know, you and I have covered that. And unfortunately now the facts show that Louisiana, Texas, Florida, all three states that did not take this very seriously from a viral clinical point of view, now unfortunately are hotspots. There is increased outbreaks in those places. Louisiana had Mardi Gras. Texas had a bunch of spring breakers. So did Florida. Texas has done very little. Now, the governor of Texas now is implementing, the governor of Florida is now implementing stay-at-home restrictions because he said, the president now said it's time to do it. And that's a conversation about leadership, right? I think the governor of Texas probably should have been able to figure this out on his own. Governor of Connecticut figured it out on his own, but that's all right. So those states are in trouble. And they're going to be hotspots and they're going to go through, just call them 3 weeks behind New York City, right? Now, New York's a little worse because it's so compressed, but maybe the Seattle area is a better example, a little less compressed. So they're going to go through what those places have gone through.
Do you have a sense of unemployment? 6.6 million people, 3.3 new ones last week. Where does that go? Do you have a sense of where that number is going to go?
Yep, goes up. And there's no solution to it. The only solution to that, remember, the economy is in cement. There's no velocity money. Businesses aren't really moving. Some are. Most aren't. Part of this, of course, it's a very complicated supply chain in which most businesses live, meaning stuff has to ship across seas. Stuff has to show up from China. China's obviously been slow. Why can't I get a charger for my MacBook? Just as an example, right? Like, well, because the Chinese production, the transit, this and that. I'm trying to help a country right now get 150 MacBooks. Someone who might be listening to this has been gracious enough to donate MacBooks. We've got the MacBooks. This country needs them really badly for contact tracing to prevent their country from getting worse. This is a poor nation. And we can't get chargers, right? So it's a real thing. So the economy has slowed down. And many businesses are going to do what they have to do, which is lay people off. They simply have no choice. They can't pay the bills. Other businesses, a much smaller percentage, I'm sure, are going to use this as a time to be even more efficient and reduce inefficient workers. But the layoff numbers are, unless we somehow believe companies without business are able to employ people, the layoff numbers are going to increase dramatically.
Do you have a do you have any number in your head? Do you know, have you seen a number you rely on? Is it 20 million? Is it 25 million people?
I wouldn't want to guess, but I imagine the rate of change will be similar to the rate of viral growth, actually, right? So I think you'll probably see, I think the next number will be shockingly big. The one after that will be mind-numbingly big. And then we'll probably begin to flatten a little bit. But, you know, if you want to do some simple math, you can look at the travel and entertainment sector and the airline sector and imagine that at least half of those people don't have jobs. That's decamillions of people right there. And that's the most obvious ones, conference businesses, of which you well understand, you know, and just about every type of business is in just a pause. And to be explicit, we could have not been here, right? We could be 1 week away from an end. We could have made a different set of decisions 3 weeks ago. That means we have one more week and we're done. We don't. We have at least four more weeks, probably way longer, because we're not going to have compliance. One comparison that a lot of people are making is about, obviously, the Spanish flu 100 years ago in the middle of World War One, towards the end of World War One. Lots of differences, lots of similarities. One thing that's worth noting, America at that time was actually more, individuals and families were more self-reliant. A much higher percentage of people lived on, worked on, were around farms, had their own backyard farm, were able to get calories on their own. We now are very ingrained, all of us, I mean, literally all of us, very ingrained into a supply chain where we get our calories and where we get all sorts of things. And we also are less capable of taking care of ourselves without the social structure around us, the critical infrastructure. So we have to keep a really sharp eye on the caloric supply chain and other supply chains and make sure they continue to work and move.
Do you have a sense, RP, of any, or the level of interaction between companies like, say, Walmart or Amazon and the government? And when you start talking about the supply chains and food, is there much interaction between the government and these guys as a way to sort of, I mean, good news is companies like Walmart, they know the numbers. Like they know the numbers better.
Walmart and Amazon, you know, really are America's supply chain right now, right? The percentage of Americans who are fed or supplied by those two businesses is profound. And they're both brilliant organizations. I mean, I've worked in and amongst both of them and seen, I mean, these places are just insanely capable and thoughtful. So on one side, yeah, you got really competent organizations. Don't forget they're profit motivated and don't forget they have a lot of people they have to employ too. But that's one side. On the other side, you have the US government, which is supposed to be providing leadership and frameworks to bring that asset base in to deploy on the national interest, right? And in fact, there's legal ways the president could literally call up Walmart and say, from now on, here's what you do. Amazon, here's what you're going to do. The president, that's through the DPA, the president has been resistant to do that. What appears to be missing in this response, amongst many things at the federal level, is a true private sector coordinator and process. And I do not understand why they haven't announced, you know, here is four-star Admiral Sally, and she's in charge of the private sector response. Or here's a retired CEO, Jack Welch just died, but something like that. Here's Jack Welch, he's gonna run the private sector response. Here's a staff of 1,000 who's gonna help him correlate all this. That has yet to happen. I don't know why, truly puzzling to me. That said, there are phone calls with the White House and Amazon and Walmart and others, apparently on a daily basis, trying to figure things out. I've heard that for 3 weeks now, and I've not seen coordinated response. We've already seen from Amazon, as you were just noting, they are only shipping things they think are relatively critical to your home. They're not shipping to New York apparently anymore. I just heard that today. I hope it's not true, but I just heard that. And then other things that aren't critical, you'll get it in a month, right? So, and other products on Amazon are being reserved, like hand sanitizer, are being reserved for hospitals and places like that. That's brilliant. That's great. And I hope they do that.
I was looking at some of the hotspots and I was thinking about, you know, I'm looking at New York and I, you know, some of the symbolic things you see, more than symbolic, but you know, when you see a hospital ship roll down the Hudson, you know, it gives you hope. When you see tents in Central Park, you see progress and it feels a little bit better. How do you see sort of New York's, say, the curve of development of solution and then the curve of sickness? How are those things coming along? And is it as predicted? Is the reaction and the defense that's being built up more effective than perhaps hoped? I'm just on a very general level. How do you see that?
As always, right? We can take great solace in the ingenuity, creativity, and service of humanity, the benevolence of people, and we're seeing that in droves across the world and big time in New York. So there are fantastic charities that are helping get PPE to doctors. There are people all over the country knitting masks. Like, all that's happening. The ingenuity of doctors to make ventilators work for more people, that's happening. The healthcare workers showing up to save lives, putting their life at risk, that's happening. Like, wow. I mean, that's awesome, right? What's also happening is largely predictable, right? When you don't build and maintain your stores of PPE and ventilators, they're not there. And so, unfortunately, it appears the federal stockpile of protective gear that is relevant to New York is about to end, to be empty. I see that as possibly solvable. Like, we literally can make masks at home. You cannot make a ventilator at home, unless you're Elon Musk, or, you know, but you can make a mask at home. And so I think that's going to be a big Rosie the Riveter moment. We're all going to be working on masks at home. I think that's something we need to do. But so good news is human ingenuity, leadership, and benevolence is arcing. Bad news is material supplies are diminishing and the curve of the virus is headed where we thought it would. So New York is in for a shitty, horrible set of weeks. And now let's hope, man, I would love to be wrong about these things, right? So let's hope that's not the case. And let's hope that most of the infected have already been symptomatic and are present. And let's hope that the lockdown has worked. So remember, there's probably a 6.5 day average from when you get infected to when you're symptomatic. So if we can even have 6.5 days of really solid lockdown, everybody is symptomatic on day 7, on, well, 14 to be perfect, but everyone is symptomatic on day 14. That's the sick people. That's the vessel of the disease, right? So a truly perfect 14-day lockdown with truly perfect contract tracing and truly perfect presentation to hospitals and for quarantine would solve this. So let's hope. That's why when I say 4 weeks, I'm allowing for the fact that nothing's perfect and that any escape of the virus is multiplies logarithmically. So let's hope that the lockdown we've seen in the last, 2 weeks in New York worked and that we're not going to see more and more sick people and that the rate of acceleration of the curve decreases. And it could happen. We thought it happened a little bit last week. That was false, but it could happen.